Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios, it's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
And then, of course, the sounds from yesterday's Detroit-Houston game. What an incredible game that was. Welcome in to the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I am Jordan Glass. Hope you had a great weekend full of awesome football. I know we had some very interesting final scores, especially in college football. We'll talk about those and everything else happening in the world of sports, including a little local sports with your own UWF Argos back home at Penn Air Field. We had the Ice Flyers with two games at the Hangar over the weekend, and of course, wrapping up the SEC soccer tournament yesterday with the championship game. We'll talk about all of that and more on today's show. And if you want to be a part of today's show, you can always do that on the studio line. Again, that number, 850-623-1330. Again, that number, 850-623-1330. Getting back to that game between Houston and Detroit, though, I mean, that was just a great game yesterday, honestly. Might have been the game of, really, the game of the day, maybe even the game of the weekend in both college and NFL, as the Lions come back. They roar back. I had to. You'll have to forgive me on that one. But they came back and they win that game 26-23. It's an interesting game because Jared Goff really could not have stunk the place up more in the first half, right? And I think this it really shows yesterday the mental strength and just the overall veteran leadership that somebody like Jared Goff brings to this Detroit Lions team. And that's why it was so big when they worked out that trade that sent Matthew Stafford to the Rams in L.A. and Jared Goff to Detroit. It was such a big thing for them because that was that step that they needed. Right? When they brought in Jared Goff, and this is no offense to Matt Stafford whatsoever. Matt Stafford's doing great. Hey, he took the Rams to a Super Bowl. Right? Congratulations to him on that. But I think when you added Jared Goff to this Lions team, it just gave them a breath of new life, right? And it was that next step they needed to really kind of become that championship contender. And the job he's done there with Coach Campbell and everybody else and, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown and all of his other talented players that they've brought in for him to use and utilize – this Lions team, I don't think they would be as good as they are if it wasn't for Jared Goff. And I think yesterday showed that. The mental toughness that Jared Goff displayed in that game was just absolutely incredible. I mean, I very impressed with what I saw from him. The bounce back, you throw five interceptions and you bounce back and lead your team on a comeback to come back and win the game. More than likely, if you're a starting quarterback in the NFL and you throw five interceptions, your team is not winning the game. But Jared Goff just kind of settled down. It was almost like a switch flip for him there in the second half, and he just went on and put on a heck of a performance. And they, like I said, they come back and look great in that game. It was the first time a quarterback's thrown five interceptions in an NFL game, though, by the way, since 2019 when Jameis Winston did it. So there's a nice little water cooler fact for you when you're at work today. You're talking about the game around the water cooler. You can feel free to shoot that out there and be like, hey, yeah, did you know that that was the first time since 2019 that a quarterback has thrown five interceptions in an NFL game? And it's the first time since it happened, like, back kind of around the same time period, and the team actually won the game. The last time that happened, I believe, was with the Falcons. Matt Ryan threw five or six interceptions. They still ended up winning that game. I think the final score was like 23-19, something like that. But just interesting little water cooler fact you might want to share there at work. I think some other things that to kind of keep an eye on with this game. And, of course, we are talking about the game yesterday between the Detroit Lions and the Houston Texans right here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola. If you got a comment about the way the show the game went yesterday, feel free to text or call 850-623-1330. Again, 850-623-1330. I think you got to look at Houston now. And the conversation with the Texans is not, are they a playoff contender? They are a playoff contender. I think they're good enough and they have the pieces to be a playoff contender. But it's, are they a Super Bowl contender yet? Keyword, of course, there being yet. I think for me, the answer is going to be no. I think they're going to get there. But it's kind of like what we talked about just a second ago with the Lions, how they had to add Jared Goff. They had to bring in some other people for them to get to the point to where they're at right now. I think the Texans still have a couple of pieces they need to bring in. What those pieces are exactly or who that's going to be, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't know if they need to bring in another big-name receiver to go with, you know, a guy like Stephon Diggs. Do you need to bring in a little bit more offensive line help? Do you need to bring in some help on the defensive side of the ball? You know, you could go through a whole list of things like that that the Texans could do to make them a better team. Yes. But I think finishing games as well. I think yesterday, a clear in great example of why they are not a Super Bowl contender is that you've got to take advantage of those turnovers, right? You've got to, when you have your foot on their throat and you've got a 13-7 lead or you've got a 16-7 lead or a 23-7 lead and you're forcing turnovers that are setting you up into the positive side of the 50, you've got to score touchdowns. Like this was a 23-7 game at halftime. It easily could have been 35-7, if not 42-7 in favor of the Texans if they could have converted touchdowns instead of field goals or gotten points at all. There was a couple of drives that stalled out. A couple of drives, they had to settle for field goals. You've got to, if you're the Texans, you've got to finish the game early and put it away. Especially going up against a team as talented as the Detroit Lions, you've got to finish them off early and put them away quick. If you don't, you let them hang around, this is exactly what's going to happen. Jared Goff eventually got going. He stopped turning the football over, and the Lions came back and won the game 26-23 on a 52-yard field goal by Jake Bates to close out the game. The Texans have to finish ball games. I think that's a big thing right now. You look at the teams that we're talking about for the Super Bowl, right? The Baltimore Ravens, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Detroit Lions, right? They finish games. If they get an opportunity to put you away, they take it. Because that's what good championship teams do. The Texans aren't quite there yet. It's going to take another season or two, but eventually they will get there. I think D'Amico Ryans is the right guy at the head coaching position. I think they've got pieces in place. They just may need to add one or two pieces here or there, and they have to learn how to finish, right? And I think a good step in that direction is CJ Stroud taking the blame on himself. Of putting his hand up and saying, I've got to do better for this team. I've got to play better. I've got to put us in better situations pre-snap, and I've got to make better reads post-snap. That's exactly what you want from your starting quarterback. You want that accountability. So I think the Texans are moving in the right direction. Are they a Super Bowl contender yet? No, I don't think they are. But they'll get there. They're moving in the right direction, and that's something that there's several teams in the NFL that have young talent like the Texans do that are moving in the opposite direction of what the Texans are. And we'll talk about one of them coming up a little later on in the show. But I think the Texans are moving in the right direction. I think they'll get there eventually. But I think yesterday was a glaring issue, a glaring reason why they are not a Super Bowl contender in my mind. And it's just because really, honestly, and truthfully, like I said, they don't finish the games. When they have a chance to put a team away, they don't do it. And when you play teams that are Super Bowl contenders, like they did yesterday in the Lions, that's going to hurt you every time. I heard Booger McFarland over the weekend during one of the halftime shows on a college football game. I think it was a great way to say this, and honestly, I'm going to steal it, and I'm going to use it. He was talking about the Miami-Georgia Tech game And he was talking about Miami's playing with their food, right? They're playing with their food. Kind of almost like on Lion King, right? Have you seen I'm sure you've probably seen Lion King, right? There's that scene where Scar's kind of toying with the mouse. Could just eat the mouse and be done with it, but he's toying with the mouse. He's letting it run across his paw, and he's dangling it by the tail. And eventually something happens, and the mouse gets away. He was playing with his food, right? Houston played with their food yesterday, and eventually the Lions came back and won. You got to close it out. Got to. The Dallas Cowboys talk about an embarrassing loss yesterday and just an embarrassing season. Jeez, man. I don't know what to say about the Dallas Cowboys anymore. We've already talked about it as much as we can on this show. I mean, it's one of those things to where it's I understand they don't have Dak Prescott, and that's going to be a big issue. And honestly, you could tell that yesterday. They looked like a team that did not have their starting quarterback. But on the defensive side of the ball, you get Micah Parsons back, and yes, he gets two early sacks on Jalen Hurts. But then after that, Jalen Hurts, kind of almost like what Jared Goff did, not maybe to the same extent because Jalen didn't throw five interceptions, but Jalen did have a fumble early in that game. And you look at it, Jalen ends up settling down and scoring four touchdowns, has two rushing and two passing, and just leads a dominant performance by the Eagles on the road in Dallas against a big divisional rival. It's just it's one of those things, and again, Jerry Jones, the comments after the game, and we'll get to the whole sunshine issue inside the stadium in just a second, but this was one of the comments from Jerry Jones I thought was very interesting that he made. This was kind of what he said when asked about his confidence in the coaching staff, mainly Mike McCarthy.
Everybody's got a hand in this, and we all know that the players play the game, and we know the closest ones to them are the coaches. Closest one to them are the people that hire the coaches, and so everybody's got a role in this. Everyone does.
No surprise here.
By the way, that's no solace to have somebody step up here and say to the fans, "That's my fault. I'll take this one." What does that do? That doesn't win the ball game, and so I'm not trying to put that BS out either.
Yeah, that part right there at the end is where I'm going. Oh, okay. Because what have we heard Mike McCarthy come out and say after losses this year? That's on me. He takes the blame. A little bit of a shot right there from Jerry Jones. I'm telling you right now, this relationship between Mike McCarthy and Jerry Jones, I know a lot of people want to talk about how Jerry Jones, usually Jerry Jones, and I will say this, Jerry Jones usually does defend his head coaches. To a fault, he will defend his head coaches. I mean, look at how many excuses he gave up for Jason Garrett. It doesn't seem that way with Mike McCarthy. I don't know what the deal is between him and Mike McCarthy, but they just do not seem like they like each other. They don't seem like they really get along well. We've now had multiple opportunities that Jerry Jones has taken to throw Mike McCarthy under the bus after losses. I mean, we had the infamous the play calling's not creative. Well, guess who's doing the play calling? It's Mike McCarthy, right? Took shots at how the play calls, the plays that are drawn up just aren't creative enough. Kind of all in the same swing right there. And now it's the stepping up to the podium and saying, well, it's on me. We'll have to do better. And you know what? For the first time in probably my sports broadcasting career, I'm going to say this, and I can't believe the words are coming out of my mouth. Jerry Jones is right. Jerry Jones is right. Getting up at the podium and saying, as the head coach, when your team is looked the way the Dallas Cowboys have, there's a difference between C.J. Stroud taking responsibility for why a team lost a game and then Mike McCarthy just week after week after week going up to the podium and saying the same thing after losing games. And they've lost how many games now in a row? I've lost count at this point. Of course, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. You can definitely do that. I think Jerry Jones is spot on with what he's saying right there at the end of that audio clip about taking accountability. That taking accountability doesn't mean anything if you're not making changes to fix it. take accountability, but you've actually got to actively do things to make it better. Now, where I disagree with Jerry Jones, getting back to how I normally feel about him, because I got to make myself feel a little comfortable here. I was uncomfortable agreeing with him, so we've got to go back to disagreeing with him. It's not on everybody. Everybody doesn't have a hand in this. I've said this before. I'm going to continue to say it again because it's the God's honest truth. This is all on Jerry Jones. As the owner, as the GM of this team, the situation they are in this year, everything tracks back to Jerry Jones. Their running game is poor. That's because in the offseason they needed a running back and they needed offensive line help. He didn't bother to go get either one of those, right? And an Ezekiel Elliott who is past his prime is not helping the run game. It's not. You didn't really go get help on your offensive line to help open up holes for the run game. So you didn't do your job there. As far as the passing game goes, again, going back to the offensive line, you needed an offensive line that can help protect Dak Prescott and give him some time. You have not done that. Dak Prescott, up until the point where he tore his hamstring off the bone, has been constantly under harassment from opposing defensive front sevens all year long because the offensive line is just trash for Dallas. It's trash. Then you needed help in the receiver department, right? You got CeeDee Lamb, and I understand it. You were trying to focus and get the deal done with CeeDee Lamb, but just because you're trying to focus and get that deal done doesn't mean you couldn't go out and get a quality wide receiver number two to match up with CeeDee Lamb, or in case, God forbid, CeeDee Lamb decided he wasn't going to come back, you've still got a talented weapon on the offensive side of the ball that you can use. Because right now what the Dallas Cowboys are doing as far as the passing game goes is it's CeeDee Lamb and then wide receiver by committee. And if I'm an opposing defensive coordinator, I take CeeDee Lamb out of the equation and I let that committee of receivers beat me because there's not a real threat. There's good players in there. I'm not saying there's not good players, but there's not a real threat. There's no other CeeDee Lamb on that field. The reason that the Dolphins went out and got Tyreek Hill, and I've used this example a lot, the reason the Dolphins went and got Tyreek Hill was to match up with Jaylen Waddle, because that creates a situation where the defense has to play honest, because you can't just double team one and leave the other guy wide open, because if you do, they're just going to go up and down the field on you all afternoon or all night long. Dallas needed a number two receiver. Jerry Jones did not go get that. And that's why this offense has been as poor as it's been this year. So no, it's not on everybody, Jerry. It's on you. You have to do a better job as the GM. If you're going to be the GM, you have to do a better job as the GM. You can't just go out there and let it be a title that you own. You can't do it. It's the Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I am Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in. Real quick, before we head to our first time out, the Jets grounded on the road against the Cardinals. This is the worst just keeps getting worse for the New York Jets. I mean, we talk about the Cowboys being a bad team, but there's one team that's giving them a run for their money right now, and that's the New York Jets. Aaron Rodgers struggling on the road, 22 of 35, only 151 yards, no touchdowns. Through the air. Breece Hall ran for 52 yards. Jets just continue to struggle stopping the run. Arizona had about 150 yards rushing, plus three rushing touchdowns. Kyler Murray easily had one of the best games of his entire career in the NFL, 22 of 24 for 266 yards and a passing touchdown. Arizona is just locked in. They're 6-4, and don't look now. They're sitting currently in first place in the NFC West, as the 49ers are right there behind them at 5-4. So the Cardinals right now leading their division, and I'm not sure that's something that anybody saw coming when this season started. So good for them. They're playing really good football. The Jets, however, the Jets are just a stubborn team that's always going to be bad because the leadership and just the way they run the team. I've said it before. Again, just like I've said with this Jerry Jones stuff, it's the same with the New York Jets stuff. It's not the X's and O's and the Jimmys and the Joes on the field. It's the people inside the front office. It's the way that the team and the organization is being ran. And until that gets fixed, until that changes, there's not going to be any real difference in this team. It doesn't matter who you bring in to be the quarterback. It doesn't matter who you fire as the head coach or who you're going to bring in as the next head coach. It's always going to be the same result each and every time. We'll take our We'll take our first time out of the show. When we come back, we are going to switch some gears up and take a look at Florida getting demolished over the weekend by Texas. Also, Bama, big win for them in Death Valley. We'll talk a little college ball coming up next right here on the Glass Half Full.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas.
So how do you know which games we're carrying?
Easy. Just follow us on Facebook, /ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola. All sports, all the time.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on a Monday morning, 9:24 here at ESPN Pensacola. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass. Of course, if you want to be a part of the show, text or call 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. Switch gears now to talk about some college football. It was an interesting weekend in college football. A couple of games that probably we were looking at on Friday going, it's not really going to matter or anything. They mattered. They mattered in potentially a big way, and we'll get to some of those games coming up. But first, I want to talk about Florida traveling to Texas. Just, two or three days after Scott Strickland comes out and gives his vote of confidence for Billy Napier and says Billy Napier will be the head coach moving forward for the Florida Gators. Again, any Florida fans that are automatically taking that as he will be back in 2025 – at no point in that statement did it say he would be the head coach in 2025. It just said moving forward, he will remain the head coach of the Florida Gators. Whether that's through the end of the season or what, I don't know. I will say when they cut to Scott Strickland on the sideline and it's 42-0 or something like that, 42-7 actually, I think, he wasn't very happy. You could see that on his face. So I don't know if he rethinks that. Who knows? But my thing with this game is Florida just got outplayed, outclassed, outcoached by a better football team. Sark just took Billy behind the woodshed and just gave him a good old-fashioned butt-whooping. There's no other way to say this. Yes, there was no DJ Lagway, so I know there are going to be some people that are going to come out and say, well, they didn't have DJ Lagway. Well, you know what? It really would not have helped anyways, even if they had DJ Lagway. You want to know why? Because DJ Lagway is not a two-way player. DJ Lagway does not play defense. This defense did not have, they couldn't find a pass rush to save their life against one of the better passing teams in college football. Texas has one of the best wide receiver rooms in all of college football. And it was on full display Saturday, for sure. Quinn Ewers with 5 touchdowns. In the first half. Not in the game. In the first half. Throws for 333 yards. I mean, for Florida, yes, okay, Aiden Warren was the starting quarterback. He had to play in that game because there was no DJ Lagway. That's going to affect the way the offense ran, which, by the way, I do want to give a shout out to one of Pensacola's very own, Jacoby Jackson, who is a running back at the University of Florida, was the leading rusher on Saturday for the Gators with 116 yards. He also had a touchdown as well. So congratulations to him, product of Catholic high school, kind of went and played at a smaller school and then transferred up to the University of Florida. So just want to give him his flowers for the great day that he had. But really kind of outside of him, he was the bright spot offensively for Florida on the offensive side of the ball. I think if I'm Scott Strickland, I look at this game on Saturday, and yes, again, you're starting a third-string quarterback who's a transfer from Yale. There was really no shot for him to actually make plays and do anything to help Florida win this football game. but the defense also did not look good, right? Florida just could not stop Texas. I mean, whatever Quinn Ewers and Sark wanted to do, it was there for them. And that's a bigger issue. That's a team issue. And that's why I sit here, and when people are like, well, they didn't have this player. If DJ Lagway would have played, it wouldn't have helped. DJ Lagway wasn't going to play safety. We're going to put him in at DB. Would not have helped, even if DJ Lagway was healthy. And the fact that there are Florida fans cheering because they scored points and didn't get shut out, and the shutout streak was intact. This is exactly what I was talking about on Friday when Austin and I were talking about should Billy Napier actually stick around at Florida. And I said, Florida fans don't do moral victories. And for the most part, that fan base doesn't. But there's a few of them that are celebrating the fact that they didn't get shut out and the shutout streak is still intact. What does it matter if you have a shutout streak intact or not if you're becoming one of the laughingstocks of college football? You used to be a powerhouse. People used to not want to have Florida on their schedule. The same way people look at Alabama on their schedule or look at Ohio State on their schedule or look at Texas or look at Georgia, that's how Florida used to be viewed. It was, oh crap, we have to play these guys. Now they look at it and they go, ha, easy win. And that's where this football team has fallen. They're okay with getting beat 49-17. They're okay with having a recruiting class that's ranked below 50th in the country. They're okay with being 2-whatever against their major rivals. That's not okay. This administration needs to take a long look in the mirror, and I think Saturday probably, hopefully, got that started, because that was a rough game. That was a rough game and a rough season. And look, we knew the stretch. Sports fans looking at this stretch for Florida knew that it would be this bad, right? Actually thought it would be worse because we thought Florida State would be good. So we were saying, man, they've got to go to Tallahassee and close it out against the good Florida State team. We now know that's not true. And that might actually be a win that Florida gets to actually have 5 wins on the season. Which, by the way, if you put money on the over on the 4 wins that Vegas had, congratulations. You're probably actually going to win some money back on that. But this Florida team just stinks, man. They stink top to bottom, left to right. And it starts with Billy Napier. 5-7, 5-7, 6-7. That's more than likely what his 3 years are going to look like by the time this season is over at the University of Florida. Are you a Gator fan? Are you listening right now? Text or call me. 850-623-1330. 850-623-1330. Is 6-7, 5-7, 5-7 acceptable for you? Is being 2-15, 3-14 against your rivals in 3 years, is that acceptable to you? Is a mediocre recruiting class acceptable? Scott Strickland fired Dan Mullen for a bad recruiting class and one bad season over 4 years. Billy Napier has 3 bad seasons and 3 mediocre recruiting classes. You got to wonder why he's sticking with one and not the other. Bama on the road in Death Valley. Big win for them on Saturday night. Of course, we're talking right here college football on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. It is the glass half full. They went into Death Valley, and they put their foot down, and they made a statement. And really, Bama's made a statement their last 2 games. Shutting out Missouri, they get a bye week, and then they come into this one and then just absolutely dominate an actual good LSU team, right? I think a lot of people are going to look at that score and go, yep, LSU's frauds. They weren't as good as we thought they were. No, they are. They're good as you thought they were. But I think Kalen DeBoer and Bama are finally starting to flex those muscles they have. This Alabama team is one of the, if not the most talented team in the country. That's why Alabama fans were so frustrated after Vandy and after Tennessee, because Kalen DeBoer was handed the keys to a Ferrari, and he's driving it like it's an S10 in those games. No offense to anybody that drives a Chevy S10. It's a quality pickup. But I'm just saying, it's not a Ferrari. And Kalen DeBoer was handed the keys to a Ferrari, and he wasn't doing much with it. Now, he's starting to rev that engine up. He's starting to kind of get a little feel of what's under the hood. And this Bama team is starting to play dominant football, if you're a Bama fan, at the right time. If you're not a Bama fan, you're going, oh, here we go. They're starting to put it together in Tuscaloosa. Because they are. They really are. This was their first complete game of the entire season. Offense and defense showed up for this game ready to go. Jalen Milroe, what is that? Is it Funny Mane, the guy on YouTube? Was it gone, Jalen? Well, gone, Jalen, because, man, 185 yards rushing and 4 rushing touchdowns against LSU. LSU, Brian Kelly and the Tigers have a problem. And honestly and truthfully, it's something they need to get fixed, because – look, I don't think Florida has a chance at beating LSU this upcoming Saturday, but I will say if DJ Lagway's healthy, DJ Lagway's a mobile quarterback. LSU struggles against a mobile quarterback, right? Case in point, 185 yards, 4 touchdowns on the ground by Jalen Milroe on Saturday. And that's not the first rushing quarterback that's given them issues. Look what happened with South Carolina earlier in the season. I still stand by the fact that South Carolina should have won that game. That penalty on that, what would have been a pick six to seal the game for South Carolina, was honestly, it was a bad call. It was a bad call. So rushing quarterbacks, mobile quarterbacks, give LSU a problem. And that's something that Brian Kelly's got to look into in the offseason. He's got to figure out a way to combat that. Because moving forward, teams are just going to start finding a way to use mobile quarterbacks against LSU because they know that's going to be their weakness. And that's the way it is with some coaches. Look, for the longest time, Nick Saban in Alabama struggled with mobile quarterbacks, right? Johnny Manziel, Deshaun Watson, all those guys gave Nick Saban's defenses troubles and gave them fits. And then Nick Saban looked into, what do I need to do to seal that up and keep that from happening? And all of a sudden, those guys stopped giving Alabama problems. Brian Kelly's got to do the same thing. He's got to figure out, how can I get my LSU defense to actually play good and contain mobile quarterbacks? But I'm going to tell you right now, I think the biggest storyline coming away from this is not anything to do with LSU and their struggle to stop a mobile quarterback or anything else that was a problem for them on Saturday night in Death Valley. I think the biggest storyline coming from this is that as we head into the final, 3 or 4 weeks of the regular season, Bama's got, 2 or 3 games left. They go, at least in the SEC, they go to Oklahoma, and then they have the Iron Bowl at the end of the year at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Coach DeBoer and this Crimson Tide team starting to turn it around, starting to play more complete and better games. Like I said, if you're an Alabama fan, that's good news. Great. If you're not an Alabama fan, that's not what you want to hear. Before we head to our next timeout, Miami and Georgia, big losses for them right here on this college football Saturday we had this past weekend. By the way, you're listening to The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Miami loses to Georgia Tech 28-3 on the road. Georgia falls on the road as well, 25-10 to Ole Miss. These two games were shockers, right? Everybody saw the score, and we were like, oh, wow. Georgia gets their second loss on the year, obviously with a loss against Alabama and now Ole Miss. Miami loses their first game to Georgia Tech. The questions with this has been, how's this going to affect the playoff ranking? How's this going to affect the playoff ranking? It won't. It won't. Teams will shuffle around, but it's not going to be anything massive. A 2-loss Georgia team where their loss is against an Alabama team that is currently in the college football playoff, and a 15-point loss on the road to an Ole Miss team that will probably jump up into the college football playoff tomorrow night when we get the new rankings. yeah, they'll stick around and they'll still be in the picture for it, right? Plus, they're still very much in the talk for the SEC championship game. They've still got a couple more opportunities. They play Tennessee this upcoming Saturday, so there's a great chance for them to get a quality win over a top 10 team there. There's going to be opportunities for Georgia to stay inside the college football playoff picture, even with two losses. They're not going anywhere. Miami, it was their first loss. They lost by 5 points on the road. Defense finally bit them in the butt, right? I think Georgia Tech had a great game plan, and it was keep Cam Ward off the field, right? Georgia Tech ran it like 50-something times, I believe, in that game. It was around 50 times that they ran the ball in that game. Their game plan was keep Cam Ward off the field, and that's how you beat Miami this year, honestly and truthfully. That is. Because Cam Ward is the reason why Miami is at the point they're at right now. And as good of a team as they are, it's because of Cam Ward and Restrepo and guys like that on the offensive side of the ball. You keep them on the sideline, you control the clock, you're going to be able to beat Miami. And that's exactly what Georgia Tech did. I don't think it's going to affect Miami much. I think they'll still be in the top 12. And even still, I mean, you look at the ACC right now. SMU is 8-0 in the conference right now. They're in first place in the ACC. If they finish out strong, they're going to have an opportunity to be in the conference championship game. And right behind them, you've got Clemson and Miami. Who knows where it goes from here? Clemson could slip up again. Miami could slip up again. If that happens, it'll open the door for the other one. But we'll just see how it plays out. But there's still a good shot Miami can get into and win the ACC conference championship game. They're in Charlotte. And if that's the case, they're still going to be. They'd be a one-loss football team that's a conference champion. They'd get one of those top four bids and get a first-round bye. This loss really isn't going to affect them too much. It's going to be interesting to see where teams get moved to tomorrow night, but I don't think these two shocker losses inside college football were necessarily too detrimental to what we're going to see with the college football playoff. We'll take a timeout when we come back. More of the Glass Half Full coming up right after this.
Get ready, Alabama fans, for the Roll Tide Radio Show, Friday mornings from 10 till 11 a.m. right here on ESPN Pensacola. Get caught up on the latest Crimson Tide updates, game analysis, and upcoming matchups. Time to talk some football, Alabama football. The Roll Tide Radio Talk Show, every Friday from 10 till 11 a.m., brought to you by Cantomat Ace Hardware, right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 a.m., 99.1 FM. Roll Tide.
The Rich Eisen Show, on weekdays after Greeny, 11 to 2, on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Getting back to it here on this Monday morning on the Glass Half Full. Thank you so much for tuning in. Switching gears to some local stuff now. Your UWF Argos on Saturday. Big win for them. Their sixth straight win. Not just that, but if you go back and you look at their schedule, their sixth straight win of double digits. Yeah, this nice little run they're on right now that's keeping them in the playoff pictures. I believe the latest poll, they were currently ranked in 10th. Obviously, a new poll will come out a little later on today. We'll see how the win over North Greenville on Saturday affects their ranking. Right now, they're just outside the playoff picture looking in at number 10. So, win on Saturday could have helped push us in there. Of course, a big game coming up against Valdosta State on Saturday. We'll get to that one in just a second. But as far as the game on Saturday against North Greenville, the Argos defense, again, if you are keeping up with the GSC and you're keeping up with D2 football, you're probably looking at this going, man, UWF's next week against Valdosta State, that offense, how are they going to have an opportunity? The defense is how they're going to have an opportunity. I mean, this defense is legit one of the, if not the best, defensive football teams in Division II football right now. Honestly and truthfully, they held North Greenville to less than 75 yards of offense on Saturday. They had a shutout. Yes, North Greenville had 14 points, but that came off of a pick six and a kickoff return. That defense did not allow anything, literally, not to mention they forced multiple turnovers and set their offense up on the positive side of the 50 multiple times to help lead to this 35-14 win for the Argos. So definitely looking forward to this defense. That's going to be the matchup for this game coming up against Valdosta State this Saturday night. That is going to be the matchup to keep an eye on, is this Valdosta State offense against this UWF defense. Who is going to bend but not break? It's either going to be Valdosta State's going to find a way to make plays against this Argo defense, or this Argo defense is going to bow up and shut down an offense that not a lot of people have been able to shut down throughout the season so far. So it is going to be a great game on Saturday. But also the Argos on Saturday rushed for over 100 yards yet again. They've done that in every game this season since October 5th. So starting on October 5th, that game on October 5th, moving all the way up to this past game against North Greenville, rushing for over 100 yards in the game. Coach Noble's talked about how they want to continue that balanced attack, because what happens with that balanced attack, you know, early on we were talking about the struggles of the offensive line, right? The offensive line was struggling to provide protection for Marcus Stokes. Couldn't really, you know, have time to go back there and run through his progressions. He's had that the last few weeks, which is why the Argos have been 6-0 in the last six games. And Coach Noble's talked about how a big reason for that is because the offense is being it's able to be more balanced. And when it's balanced, that run game is going to take some of the pressure off that offensive line. So when they do throw it, that's going to allow them to be able to protect that quarterback, because there's not so much pressure on them. Those linebackers are having to play back. They're having to keep an eye on things coming out of the backfield. So that is not going to allow them, because we were seeing teams early on, I mean, they would run a twist with a defensive end and an outside linebacker, and they'd switch the outside linebacker on the inside, and boom, he'd get through. Because they weren't really threatened by anything coming out of the backfield. Now they are, and they have to stay at home. They have to keep it in front of them and make sure that that's not what's going to happen on the play. It's not going to be a screen play. It's not going to be a draw. It's not going to be anything like that. They've got to play honest. And that's allowed this offensive line to provide more protection for the quarterback, whether it's been Stokes, whether it's been Bartolo, whoever has been playing. We've seen both of them the last few weeks. So it's really, it's done a nice job being able to stay balanced on offense. And if they can do that against Valdosta State next Saturday with the way their defense plays, they're going to have a good opportunity to get a big win on the road and set themselves up. If they go to Valdosta, here's how it works for UWF right now. If they go into Georgia and play Valdosta State, they are in the playoffs if they win. If it's a close loss, I think there's still probably an outside chance they could get into the playoffs. But right now, if you are, a win is in for the Argos, right? A win gets you in for the Argos coming up this Saturday against a very good Valdosta State team. And, of course, that game gets kicked off 7 o'clock, so we will have the pregame for you coming up at 6:45 for that one with Will Kennedy on the call in that game. Elsewhere, it's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Elsewhere on the ice, we'll move from the gridiron to the ice. The Pensacola Ice Flyers, they split a weekend series against the Knoxville Ice Bears over the weekend. One Friday night, 7-4. Definitely an offensive explosion for sure. Coach Graham said after the game, you know, he was very happy that they were able to find the back of the net like they did. Said that it was good for the team and good for the confidence of the team, because it was a team that, yes, the season has not gone well for them, but they've had plenty of good looks at a goal in just about every game. They are getting the looks. It's finding the back of the net that's been the issue for them. And they were able to do that Friday night, scoring 7 goals, one of those coming on an open net towards the end of the game. But still, quick early jump out to a 3-0 lead against Steven Mundinger, which, by the way, can I just say, it was weird to see Steven Mundinger in a Knoxville uniform. I don't know if you're an Ice Flyer fan. I don't know if you were there last night or on Friday night, but it was just weird to see Steven Mundinger in a different uniform other than the Pensacola Ice Flyers. If you're not familiar with the Ice Flyers, Steven Mundinger was the goalie for the Ice Flyers last year. He's with Knoxville this year. And was a nice homecoming for him. And some of the fans were playfully jousting and jesting with him and poking at him as the game got started. He did end up having to be pulled in the game because he allowed 3 straight quick unanswered goals. But again, it was good to see him back in the hangar, but it was definitely weird to see him in a Knoxville uniform. Sam Dabrowski two goals in the second period, just one shy of a hat trick. We almost had a hat trick at the Hangar on Friday night. That would have been great. He was actually kind of the reverse of Mundinger, where Dabrowski was playing against his former team in Knoxville, so he came out and put on a pretty good performance there. As far as Saturday, a tough 5-3 loss for the Ice Flyers against Knoxville. The Ice Flyers, they did fight back into the game with goals in the second and third period. At one point, it was a 4-3 game late into the third period. Pull the goalie, as you do in hockey and as you do in soccer, when you're trying to get that tying goal, that equalizer there in the last little bit of the match. You pull your goalie and you get that extra guy out on the field or on the ice, and unfortunately Knoxville found the back of the net on an empty goal. Very similar to how the Ice Flyers closed it out on Friday is exactly how Knoxville closed it out on Saturday with that empty net goal to win by a score of 5-3. But the Ice Flyers showed fight. You know, Knoxville jumped out to a quick 3-0 lead, and this team just continued to battle back and chip away at that. And like I said, at one point was within one goal at 4-3 with less than 5 minutes to play in the game. You know, they had an opportunity to tie it, just could not get the job done there. Texas gets the job done in the SEC soccer tournament at Ashton-Brosnahan Soccer Complex. This was a wild tournament full of upsets. Like, we started off day one, Bama was the 12th seed and LSU was the 11th seed. Nobody really expected them to win on Sunday, but they did. They advanced on, and I believe LSU actually got down to the quarterfinals before they lost. But, yeah, some upsets there. And then, of course, in the semifinals, we had number 4 South Carolina knock off number 1 Mississippi State, one of the best teams in the entire country when it comes to soccer in that game. So definitely was a big win for South Carolina. Just could not get it done Sunday against a very good Texas team, though. Carly Montgomery scoring the game-winning goal there in the 80th minute to secure that 1-0 win. And again, much as she was the entire tournament, Mia Justice big for the Longhorns in the net with 7 saves against South Carolina on Sunday. And I just want to give a shout-out to everybody that showed up for the tournament. It was a great crowd out there. Really, every night was a great crowd. It was the quarterfinals. Sunday was a great crowd. The quarterfinals on Tuesday, the semifinals on Thursday, and yesterday it was packed for the final. So shout-out to everybody that showed up and filled Ashton-Brosnahan Soccer Complex. And a shout-out to our friends over at Pensacola Sports for the great job they did once again on this year's tournament. It was the 3rd year of it in Pensacola, and we look forward to the 4th year coming up in October and November of next year. Let's take our final time out of the show. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with your headline roundup right here on the Glass Half Full.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. So whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Wrapping things up here on a Monday morning on the Glass Half Full, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Let's go ahead and take a look at your headline roundup, where we start off the final segment of the show, taking a look at all the top headlines in the world of sports. Started off, Jake Bates hits a game-winning 52-yard field goal to complete the Lions' comeback over the Texans on Sunday. Jerry Jones says everyone has a part to blame in how the Cowboys' season has gone up until this point. Players, coaches, and administration. Chicago Bears head coach Matt Eberflus looks to make some changes following the team's 3rd loss, said that even could include making a change at who is playing, calling the plays there for them in Chicago. Mike Norvell fires both coordinators at Florida State as well as the wide receiver coach following Saturday's 52-3 loss to Notre Dame. And Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, and Indiana make up your top 5 in the college football AP poll. And, of course, we will have the college football playoff ranking coming out tomorrow night. I expect the top 5 to be very similar to that, and we'll just have to see how things play out. Still could be a chance for Miami to still be a top 10 team, even with their loss to Georgia Tech. Don't really think the loss for Georgia is going to affect them much, because you look at their losses, Alabama, Ole Miss, two very good quality losses. I think the committee still is going to consider them a potential playoff contender. So I think that really those two big upsets we had over the weekend in college football inside the top five, not really going to matter much in the grand scheme of things. Anthony Davis, a little NBA news. He left the game for the Lakers in their win last night over the Raptors with an apparent eye injury. We'll have to see how long that is going to be something that affects him and the LA Lakers. That is your headline roundup. And real quick, we've got a little bit of time left for tonight's Monday night game. The Miami Dolphins on to take on the LA Rams in LA. Can Miami get out of their own way and finally win a game? That's fumbles against Arizona. Defensive letdown against Buffalo last week has cost them the last 2 weeks. They've got to get out of their own way. Matchup to keep an eye on tonight, Cooper Kupp versus Jalen Ramsey. Jalen making his return to L.A. to take on his former team. Tyreek Hill questionable for the Dolphins tonight with a wrist injury. That is definitely going to be something to keep an eye on there. Rams have lost the last five to the Dolphins. I think that they get it done tonight, though. I think the Rams at home, Miami's offensive line has been suspect. They're going up against a very good pass rush in the Rams. I think the Rams get it done at home, 30-21. And, of course, we'll recap it all coming up tomorrow right here on The Glass Half Full. Stay tuned to ESPN Pensacola. We've got Greeny coming up next.